Welcome to the Permatemp Corporation. A presentation of the audio podcast, This Is Actually Happening. Episode 20. What if you were a white school principal in 1968?
Actually grew up in the coal regions of Pennsylvania, up in Schuylkill County. After I was discharged from the Navy, I did attend a college and graduate from there and went into the teaching profession, teaching general science and advanced biology. Then I was recruited to apply for a job at the local high school, an outstanding high school, by the way, and come in as an assistant principal. I don't know that I was ready for that. And we had about 2,400 students, 575 to 650 in the graduating class. And the makeup of the students at that time, a small contingent of black students, maybe 10%, and then there was a growing contingent of Latinos coming into Lancaster. And both of those grew to the extent that, you know, today it's a majority-minority school. This was in 1968 that I became an assistant principal, and it happened to be in the years just prior to the civil rights movement, or in the midst of the civil rights movement. I grew up as a son of an immigrant minor. I know about segregation in where I grew up, but it wasn't a racial segregation. It was the Irish against the Hunkies, okay? It's a whole different thing, but still the same thing. My parents came from Czechoslovakia, and I lived in a valley that's 9 miles long. The Irish lived up in the upper part of the valley. We lived in the lower part. We were the Huns. They were the dirty Irish. We had to walk from the lower part of the valley to the higher part of the valley. And since this is the coal region, on either side of the road that we had to walk were coal banks, debris that was thrown out. I call them coal banks. And the Irish would be up on top with what we call goonies, and they would throw these rocks down at you. I had my head split, you know, with the rock that was thrown by. But after a while, they started intermarrying. And now you go up that valley and everybody's American, okay? You're not a Hun anymore. You're not a dirty Irish. My background got me ready for anything that came down the pike, but I didn't get me ready for violence. That was something that's never preached to me. Then I was surprised when they said, you know, our principal is going to be leaving and being transferred to another school, and we need a principal for the high school. So I said, you got to be kidding. I'm wet behind the ears as an administrator. I've only put in 1 year. I said, okay, and that was the beginning of my principalship, which happened in 1969. That was the beginning of the civil rights unrest in high schools for this location. I was one for working toward everybody getting together. In fact, the group came in. This was a combination group of students and their parents asking about having an assembly featuring blacks and their accomplishments. And I didn't have any problem with that. But then they asked about bringing the black flag in and asking everybody to salute that. I said, well, wait a minute. We're going to salute the American flag up front. And then afterwards, fine, you want that. And some teachers were highly upset about that. And they wanted no part of a black assembly. And I said, as long as I'm principal here, we're going to have it. And we did. And they all took up their stations where they had to be. And it went off very well. There was a lot of applause from the whole audience. This was starting to create some problems with some of the students, because thinking some people are getting special treatment, and it was tough. Now, we graduated like 600 and some students, And one of the things that I had to do was announce their names as they came through. Well, there were a lot of changes in names. You know, some people were taking on national origin names and what have you. I was very careful to study those and to pronounce them correctly. Well, at that time, you had factions, of course. There were people outside of the school during this time calling for freedom. They were from a local seminary, they were, quote, what some people call the do-gooders. And they wanted justice now, and all those old terms that were being bandied about. The group of white students who were opposed to the faction of do-gooders, and their theme was, they're disrupting our education. The Black Panthers had come to this city and they were establishing their influence for a period of while. And one of the ways they did that was to set themselves up halfway between the school and the students' homes. And as the students were walking to school, they would meet them and say, now here's what we want you to do today in school. And some of it was to create unrest. One of the ways to do that was to when you saw some of the student body sitting down on the steps in the foyer, just go over and kick them in the foot or in the ankle and what have you, and then, you know, you get into a confrontation. The intent, I suppose, was to create a riot. The youngsters, I had a lot of respect for them because they came to school and they were facing two different curricula. You know, there was the school curriculum, and then they had to deal with this real-life curriculum that they were meeting on the way to school. Somebody telling them what to do. Here's what you're going to do today. You're going to do this. You're going to set off the fire alarm or whatever. At least one of the young ladies who was on the student council came in to me with tears in her eyes. They were saying, we don't know what to do. They're telling us to do stuff we wouldn't normally do. But they said, if we don't do it, they're going to be waiting for us on the way home. And so we had that fear and that threat of bodily harm. So I didn't know totally where they were coming from, but I know of one case where a young man came from Detroit, Michigan, and he's asking to be entered as a student. He said, well, I'm living with relatives in the city. And that was true. We checked that out. He was with relatives. But he was so nice. Mr. Principal this and Mr. Principal that. And he had to be entered because legally he was living in the community. But it was only a matter of a week or 10 days that he was now starting to tell people what to do, and he wanted a meeting with the superintendent, and his group wanted to meet with the superintendent. They wanted their demands met. The counselor, the head counselor, asked, well, what demands? You haven't demanded anything. And the one youngster looked at his watch and he said, well, it's too late, never mind. And it was at that moment that out in the foyer, the kicking and whatever started, you know, and the shouts started, and that was the plan for the day, start a riot. That was never termed a riot, but there was discontent. And the police were always on call. They were even in my office many times. We'd have sandwiches for them, and they'd have their binoculars. The teachers, of course, were, let's get this stuff out of here. This doesn't belong in the school. We don't need this kind of unrest. We don't have to come. Most of the teachers were white. We had a black counselor. We had one black home economics teacher. But most of the others were white. Nobody had experience to deal with this. You know, we all went to our various undergraduate schools and then on to graduate school, but nobody was training you how to handle this kind of situation, of this kind of unrest in the high school. I think what you had in a faculty meeting was the desire for status quo, the peace that we've had here, etc. And then you had some people who were outspoken. Here's an episode that stands out in my mind. We were down in City Hall meeting in the mayor's office with the local police, the mayor, and others. And while we were meeting there, we got a phone call that there was a group of students, white students, gathering on the football field of a local, one of our junior high schools. So he said, I invited them into the auditorium of the school to discuss this. And he said, you better get somebody out here. Well, before they even said that, I said, well, I'll volunteer to go out, because they were our students who were out there doing this from that end of town, all white students. I did go out, and the auditorium was full, not only with the students, but with some of their parents. See, I got up in the stage, and I said to them that I understand that you're upset, but you got to give us more time to work on this, because, you know, right now, I just came from a meeting at the mayor's office with the chief of police and other police and other people, some teachers, and we're working on it into the night. This one voice that kept coming from the back, from a parent, you know, everything that was stated, or if somebody shouted something up, he'd want explanation now, explanation. Explain, you know, explain, explain. Came from a union hall, you know, that's all I can see. And I like unions, but, well. As I continued to speak, things started to settle down a little bit. And then, thankfully, I wish I knew this youngster's name. To this day, I don't know, but I see his face and I see his blonde hair. And he's sitting up in the front seat and he gets up. This took courage in front of that group and said, I think we ought to give Mr. some time. This is choking me up. He says, they're working at it now, and I just think we ought to hold off and just not do what we were planning to do. The way he expressed himself made sense for the rest of the group. He said, let's just give them a chance. They're working on it right now, you know. Thank goodness for him. I don't know what would have happened otherwise. After it was over, somebody came up to me in a suit and said, he said, I wouldn't want to have been you to have to go up in front of that group tonight. He said, but I found out that was the FBI. They were there. He was an FBI agent who was in the crowd. In fact, there was more than one, I understand. So I didn't know who all was involved in this whole thing. Now, what the plan was for all of them to go to school early the next day with their cars, park them out in front with car chains and tire irons. And if those people are going to be out there marching around the school calling for justice now and carrying the placards, we're just going to go out and we're going to beat them up. The next day then, the cars were parked out there. Once classes started, then a group started arriving that was doing the marching, and they were out there marching again. So now, you know, we're going to be in for trouble. There was one black policeman, a captain of the police, who was in a meeting with us at that very moment. And in the midst of that, there's a knock on the door, and I went and answered it. I got a little note that was handed to me and said, if those people aren't out of there by the time this period is over, then we're going out and we're going to take care of things. So I went to the police captain. I says, Captain, here's the note I just got, and I know it's going to happen unless those people get off of that sidewalk. So he takes that note and goes over to the black minister now, who was making these different demands. And just like that, got up, got out and talked to those people with about 2 minutes to spare, got them out of there. So there, what was averted at that point was something major. And we lucked out because it didn't happen. So it was a series of, I don't know, good fortune maybe just doing the right things, because as I said, nothing I learned at the university taught me how to handle this kind of situation, or any of us who were there. Apparently we learned that there was a five-city pact, I suppose, that the Black Panthers were working in, and that included five different districts here. And unfortunately, in each one of them, there was a murder committed during that time. They had riots, which resulted in a murder of a student. But we were fortunate enough not to have that happen in our school. There was nobody murdered at our high school. It went on through 69, 70, and some mistakes began to happen on the part of the Black Panthers. Some of the students were starting to not follow the instructions of the Black Panthers in town. The ante was up. Now it wasn't, well, we're not only going to be waiting for you when you come back here, but we know where your mama lives. And then they went too far when they start making that kind of statement, because they picked on a minister in town who was highly respected in the community, Black minister. And as I said, he was really a respected man by everybody in that town. And when they picked on him, that was the end of the Black Panthers, because the community turned on them and they left town. And after that, you know, things started to level off. We got through it, and it was strange how it only went on like for 2 years. I can't pinpoint the time, but there was a time at which suddenly everybody's looking around saying, you know, what happened? Was there change that occurred? Yes. Some at the higher levels in the district, you know, Black educators who were hired. There were some who were made principals. A change that was a positive change occurring. Were there consequences to all of this? I think so. I think that a number of parents felt uncomfortable having their kids go to the public school now and would transfer their children maybe to a private school. I was the principal there for 13 years. At that point, I think nobody had served that long. You had precursors to what was going to happen, but you didn't always know how far it would go, and therefore you didn't know how to prepare for it or handle it. There were so many things that had gone on behind the scenes that nobody will ever know. Everybody attempted to do what the situation called for and what they hoped was right. I don't know. But my hat is off to at least two groups of people. One would be the students, as I have already pointed out. They had to get up in the morning, I'm sure with knots in their stomach, to know what they were going to face. They're going to get met along the way. And then they've got to go into a high school that now there is some hostility because of what's happening in society. And still they had to study and try to make good grades. And then my hat's off also to the staff. The staff who knew that the kids respected them in every way, and now those kids being told to disrespect them. But they too came to school every morning with knots in their stomach. As I will confess up front, I came to school, you know, you get up at 4 in the morning and you have no idea what you're going to face. And so you went to school with knots in your stomach, and somehow things played out.